Thank you very much for the kind invitation. I'm very happy to be here to meet all of you. As you see in this saying of David Hilbert, I'm by full heart, I'm a geo-netter, and I try to give in the first half of my talk something like an overview, and in the second half, I want to present you some very fresh results. The story of so-called Minkowski geometry of finite dimensional norm spaces started, which is not so known, with the habilitation of Bernhard Riemann, where he was the first who explicitly investigated a non-Euclidean norm. Of course, Hermann Minkowski, and this is well known, gave then the axioms of this theory. In fact, he started with a non-symmetric case. Normally, and this is somehow wrongly attributed in our papers and books, Minkowski geometry should have unit balls which are convex but not centered at the origin. Now this is almost forgotten, and everyone uses for the symmetric case this notion. Here are some motivations of Minkowski. You know, he was strong in physics also, and he was always interested in direction-dependent phenomena like crystal growth, but also geometry of numbers strongly came in as a motivation level, and also by others, not only by him, problems from location science, like here the explanation of the Manhattan norm for the taxi driver in Manhattan. Also people in this time, around 1910, say, like Karl Menger, contributed by very interesting notions that I will use today also. Like the notion of a D segment, which is the set of all points between A and B, which satisfy the triangle inequality with equality. This is a metric segment and a very useful notion for metrical problems in Minkowski geometry. Okay, so very soon people observed a lot of interesting phenomena, like, for example, it makes sense to define such an orthogonality. These two lines are orthogonal due to their behavior as you see it in the picture, and first surprises came to be, like, this orthogonality is not symmetric in the general case. Or one can ask, and of course this created a lot of interesting problems, one can ask for the self-circumference of the unit circle in such a geometry and observe that this Minkowski and pi is between 3 and 4. Here is the Euclidean case, and interesting constructions are behind this. And a lot of little geometry results came to be, but not ordered. There was no monograph, and an interesting development started in Lemberg. Stefan Banach used this notion and also the infinite dimensional case to extend things properly, to extend things in an abstract way. Over the 20th century, one can say, also other colleagues from Lemberg contributed. I need not mention the names, they are famous. The development started to become abstract, and more or less geometry, elementary geometry, for example, was almost forgotten or only added as addenda to convexity papers. This went on over the century. Always again, famous contributors like radon curves, we will have them later, or James and Day and then Amir contributed regarding these orthogonality questions and characterized inner product spaces within these norm spaces. Herbert Busemann came from the viewpoint of differential geometry and Findlor geometry, which is more general and locally Minkowskian. He wrote this famous book about inner product. Ah, sorry. Yes, I understand. Sorry. As a doctorand of Dvoretsky, also Branko Grünbaum, the author of Convex Polytopes and other famous books like Tilings and Patterns, contributed in his early papers a lot of results. Also Victor Klee. You see that are also people famous in convexity. The relations to convexity became clear. In 1996, a a Canadian author, Tony Thompson, wrote a very nice book in the Cambridge series about Minkowski geometry, and this was somehow a breakthrough. He was collecting many results from the analytical point of view about this theory. And today you have, roughly speaking, this picture, you can say. You have main influences from Banach space theory, from Finsler geometry. In a Finsler space, the local situation is Minkowskian. You have distance geometry and discrete geometry, of course, and you have the main methods come from convex geometry, also the affine background. Here you have things that I told you already, no longer essential, and here you have some new fields from the applied side, which are also interested now in these normed planes and normed spaces, and contributions are always welcome, also in the modern sense, by journals, as far as my feeling is. But let me start with a connection to convexity. One of the authors of a book, Geometry of Spheres and Normed Spaces, Schaeffers, he was actually, as far as I know, from Brazil, at any rate from South America, gave some very nice saying here, and I think this shows again the close connection between convexity and Minkowski geometry. So let us start with some problems, interesting problems. For example, bodies of constant Minkowskian width that are convex bodies whose width function in the Minkowskian sense. So you measure the width of the unit ball. It's always equal. It can be a square, the unit ball. It's clear. Yeah. And which bodies have the same width function like the unit ball? We study them in convexity, when they have constant width in the usual sense, and of course we started to study them also in Minkowski spaces. And here, for example, there are now maybe, I guess, 200 papers which touch this problem, or maybe 150 also in Minkowski spaces. Here is a basic theorem. A body is of constant width in a Minkowski space if this interesting relation holds. This is called the difference body, or the central symmetral if you make a half before it. And this should be the unit ball, or you characterize them by the statement that all diametric chords having parallel support lines or hyperplanes at their endpoints of K have the same length in measured in the norm. So from this you can also define complete sets, which are very important in functional analysis, that are bounded sets that cannot be enlarged without increasing the diameter. Now we have two notions. It's interesting to look for connections. In d-dimensional Euclidean space, we have equivalence of both notions. No longer in Minkowski spaces, there is only an implication. These counterexamples first were constructed by Eggleston. And in very different worlds, very different. You can also define, which in a sense has connections also to ball polytopes and notions like this, the spherical intersection property. Convex bodies are called in this way if they are intersections of all balls whose center is from them, and of course measured in the norm. And this is still equivalent to completeness in normed spaces. So interesting questions occur here, a lot of geometry questions. For example, this we saw now, the difference body has to do with constant widths. This is the unit ball of the norm. So you see that, for example, this triangle is of constant width in this hexagonal norm. This is then the unit ball. So we can study such bodies, and we need a deeper understanding of Minkowski addition, a deeper understanding. This is not easy. And you can ask, for example, in which normed spaces are the only bodies of constant width the balls? No others. And you see that the maximum norm is an example. And what else can we say about this interesting question? Because this parallelogram can only be partitioned into these summons of the same shape, you know, say. So we have applications of the difference body, which has many other applications in convexity, and this question, which I mentioned already. We have seen that this gives somehow a description of what we have to do, and we call in convexity such convex bodies irreducible. Yes? For example, also the simplex is irreducible, but it uses nothing because for us now because it's not centrally symmetric. And here is a partial answer. Of course, there are very many norm balls. For example, all simplicial polytopes are irreducible. This is a large class. Yeah? But besides this, this result is non-trivial. And there is no further progress. Okay, so the nice thing is that a lot of metrical questions come in if you have this framework. For example, complete bodies are also interesting for the isodiametric problem. I forgot to say, the geometry of Minkowski spaces is also interesting because having it, we understand our old Euclidean geometry much better. For example, everyone knows that the solution of the isoperimetric problem is the ball, but to have the right view on this is if you have Banach spaces in your mind, because this solution is not the ball of the original space, it's the ball of the dual space. So you get the whole, which is of course the same ball in Euclidean case, but in other norms you see the difference, you know, and so you get a full understanding by framework of norm spaces. Okay, the complete bodies help us to solve the isodiametric problem, which is also very old. Which body of diameter 1, say, convex body, has maximum volume? The solution is the ball. We can dualize this problem. The diameter is the maximum of the width function. So, Erhard Heil from Darmstadt was clever to introduce a new body class in the 70s. He asked the dual question. If I take instead of the maximum of the width function, the minimum of the width function, which is also called thickness, I give you all bodies of thickness 1, okay? And I ask not for the maximum volume, I ask for the minimum volume. This problem in three space is open. Until in two space, it's the regular triangle. This is an old theorem of Pahl. But in three space, we don't know. So this is a candidate which is partially a tetrahedron and partially has round boundary parts. This is the best known body constructed by Heil himself, but we don't know whether this is the solution. And we have nothing in higher dimensions, of course. So this is an open problem. Which body of minimum width, 1 or W, has minimum volume? We don't know it. Okay, and Heil understood, if I take this very natural definition once more of complete bodies and dualize it, replacing diameter by thickness and replacing the containment relation vice versa, then I get a new body class. And he called them reduced bodies. So this is the definition of this body class, and we have, of course, immediately we see that every body of constant width is reduced, but there are more. For instance, the regular triangle is reduced, the regular fivecon, the quarter of a disc, and the eighth part of a ball are examples. I show you some pictures. Here you see that are reduced bodies in the Euclidean plane. The left picture contains even three examples which are written there. And what we know, for example, is that such a reduced body contains boundary parts of bodies of constant width. And where it is not so, then some strange inside figures called butterflies occur. And in the plane, we have almost everything in our hands about the boundaries of such bodies. but not in higher dimensions. They can occur also as polygons. Here you see again a red butterfly. These polygons consist of butterflies. Other examples, you see, this is really an interesting class, and the examples are also partially understood in higher dimensions, but there are a lot of open problems. And a very big surprise occurred in a paper of Marek Lasak when he showed that a reduced body in three space can have arbitrarily large diameter, which is not the case with bodies of constant width, of course. You know, these green parts are boundary parts of bodies of constant width, and the rest, as you see, is something like linear. And you can prolong this body as you see it here as much as you wish, you know. And later we understood with Marek that the reason for this is not Euclidean norm, but strictly convex and smooth norm. So you can handle things in this norm. So the first step was done to extend reduced bodies to normed spaces. You see in the right picture the dodecagonal norm instead of the Euclidean norm here. And we got results in the same way. This is our two reduced bodies. Left hand side is the unit ball. It's the Manhattan norm in three space. And the other two pictures show you reduced bodies in this norm. And for instance, the simplex you see above, you can take these two edges, you know, and you can again prolong as much as you wish. The lower picture not. This is fixed. And here you have a similar example. The boundary parts in this upper part, the round parts, come together to a Reuleaux polygon, and again this body can be prolonged as much as you wish. And we got some further results. Nevertheless, I will come back to two problems in which are already interesting in Euclidean space. This is the first theorem that you get also in normed spaces. If you marry reducedness and smoothness, then you get constant width. This is not so hard. So the same question is with reducedness, and this is confirmed in Euclidean space only in the planar situation. It's open, and for instance Helmut Grömer was hardly fighting with this problem, so we don't know how it is in higher dimensions until now. And even better or nicer is the last problem. Of course there are reduced polygons in Euclidean plane, I showed you. We don't know whether there is a reduced polytope starting with dimension 3. It's open. And here you see another, for young researchers, another property of Minkowski geometry. If Euclidean geometry is too hard, then go to some nice norms and you get results. Okay. So this was some convexity, but due to the thing I told you about Banach, also a lot of elementary geometry, nice theorems that you find in old books of Johnson and so on are not generalized until now to norm planes. So there is a lot of open space. Let's, for example, take the Fermat-Torricelli problem. This is the question for the point of minimum distance sum to three green points here in this example, and you see in this example a construction which is also closely related to the Napoleon theorem of this point when all the angles in this triangle are not too large. So here is another construction, and it was shown by Galois theory that for five and more given points this is a non-trivial problem. You cannot give an exact construction in ruler and compass understanding. And so this problem is still alive. There are still many papers appearing about it. And if you go with this problem, asking for the point of minimum distance sum of n given points, say in the plane or in space, to Minkowski spaces, then you get surprises. Namely, this is an example, Manhattan norm, green is the unit circle, in both examples, sorry, and red are the given points. And you see, in both cases, even the complete convex hull of the given points is the solution set. Any point of this convex hull satisfies the criterion to be minimal. So the situation is completely different to Euclidean space, and later you understand that strict convexity and smoothness are responsible for this. So all strict convex norms have one solution point for this and other phenomena. And here again, these D segments I mentioned already, going back to Karl Menger, help. So here you see once more Menger, he gave many contributions to mathematics and geometry, but one older contribution is in distance geometry, it's the D segment. Here is the explanation. So once more, the definition is clear, equality in the triangle. Inequality, this I gave already, but the geometric explanation is much nicer. If you have the two endpoints of this D segment, AB here, and this is the shape of a unit ball, then you bring the center of one into A, and the boundary of this homothetical copy of the unit ball should go through B and vice versa. And if B is contained in a real proper face of this unit ball, then you take all points of this face and you start from A rays going through these points. You get a cone also in higher dimensions, you know. And the same vice versa. And the intersection of these two cones is the D segment AB with endpoints A and B. And with this you can geometrically work. And so you get explanations somehow for, here's another picture of the same thing I showed you before. This is our two Fermat-Torricelli situations. The unit ball is again hexagonal and this great body. And in this situation, again, here you see the connection to D segments. And here you have this hexagon as solution set and there this fat line segment to the Fermat-Torricelli problem. And you know Fermat-Torricelli you need also for Steiner minimum trees, at least locally, and things like this. So these things have also applications. So this was maybe enough in my introductory part, showing some partially older results and so on. And now I want to come to some very fresh results, which we finished just now and submitted the first part already to a journal. You know, in school, we learn already about the circumcircle of a triangle. And in fact, there are two notions. On the one hand, you can demand that the circle passes through all the vertices. This is number one, and this is usually called circumcircle. And if the triangle looks like this, there is another interesting smaller circle, namely the smallest one, which contains this triangle. And this is the minimal enclosing disk or circle. And we decided to look into the literature what is known about this in normed planes. And it was a big surprise to find out almost nothing. Never it was systematically done to ask for these types of circles. Partial result of the results, of course, exist. And so we started. This is the headline. Part one is already submitted. Part two will be submitted, I don't know, in 2 weeks or something like this. And in the first part, we look more for circumcircles. And in the second part, for the other type, but they hang together. We cannot completely separate the results. You know, sometimes we need this for this and vice versa. So in principle, it should be better one paper, but you know, you cannot submit a paper of 50 pages. This is almost impossible, you have to split. So again, we have a normed plane with unit disk and unit circle. The unit disk is a convex body centered at the origin, the unit circle its boundary, and a norm circle will be written in this way, first the midpoint and then the radius. It's a homothetical copy of the unit circle, of course, and strict convexity and smoothness, as everyone knows from us, are needed. Further tools that we need, again, this Birkhoff orthogonality, you saw it already. Here is an analytical definition, but I showed you in a picture before. So these two vectors are Birkhoff orthogonal if this is satisfied and this is not in general symmetric. And we need the monotonicity lemma, which is a tool, there are papers about it by Grünbaum and others, that you need several times, saying that if you walk from here to here, then the connecting norm is not decreasing in principle, which is very natural in Euclidean norm, but not so trivial in Minkowski norms, in general norms. And we take this notion for triangles. So from the very beginning, we assume that our three vertices are non-collinear. And here are the two definitions. In principle, you need not read very precisely because I explained already on the blackboard. This is taken like in Euclidean geometry. And we are also mainly interested in the position of the midpoints of these two circles. Yeah? Circumcenter and midpoint of minimal enclosing balls. Regarding circumcircles, you have, and this is well known, these three situations that can occur. And you have two interesting situations, you have pictures there. There is a unique circle passing through the three vertices, strictly convex and smooth. you must have such a norm. At least two circles pass through the three points, figure one. This is only possible when the norm is not strictly convex. Of course, everything is also depending on the shape of the unit ball and the position of it to the three vertices. Therefore, we write is possible. Yeah? And there exists no circumcircle, which you see in figure two. I think it's clear. So this you have to take into consideration. And I continue with a further important tool, which is really needed to get some order into this world, namely the intersection of two norm circles. The first contributions go back to Branco. As I said already, Branco wrote his PhD in this direction. Dvoretsky was his doctor father. And that then is a very interesting paper of a Polish colleague from the Polish school, Banasiak. And we did something else, completing these things. So how can the intersection of two norm circles look like? You know, this is between topology and geometry, this question. And here is a theorem, which more or less goes back to Branco-Grünbaum. The intersection can have only one of the following forms. Empty, it's clear. Consists of two closed, disjoint segments, one of them or both may be reduced to a point. This gives already many subcases again. Lying on opposite sides of the line, and here I give you pictures that you already see from the very beginning how it is meant. This is the notion for a segment, yes? And the intersection consists of two segments, one of them or both may be reduced to a point with common point U1 and V1, you see these points here. So I think you get the picture. Yeah? And now you see in these pictures all the possible cases. We went through seriously a little bit improving the results of Banasiak. Okay. So this you one will see then also in our paper. And here is the rest. Maybe you need not concentrate on this too long. It's technical somehow, geometrically, but it has to be done. We need it. With this, we come to the following corollary. Number one. Assume that C1 and C2, you can always, by the way, look at these pictures. I don't know. A little sharper maybe, I don't know. Are two different circles in a norm plane, and now the connection comes. These three non-collinear points belong to this intersection and this statement. This is the, and now the following statements we get. A, if the radii are equal, then the intersection consists of two closed, disjoint, non-degenerate segments parallel to the connecting segment of C1, C2, and symmetric to the midpoint of this. And if the radii are different, then the intersection can have only one of the following forms. The intersection consists of a non-degenerate segment, so we can already reduce, and a point lying on opposite sides of the midpoint connecting segment. Line, excuse me, this is not segment, this is line, I was wrong. Moreover, this segment is not parallel to this midpoint connecting segment. And the second form is this. The intersection consists of two non-degenerate segments lying in the opposite sides of this line through the midpoints with common endpoint U1, V1, which was somehow here at the end. You saw it in the first picture. Therefore, in all three situations, one of the segments contains a side of our given triangle. Okay, so this is already somehow helpful in describing the situation. And of course, the most natural question is where, if you consider arbitrary norms, where can the circumcenter be? And it turns out that if you introduce these regions, sorry, if you introduce these two blue types of regions, then you see the first region, K0, is the convex hull of the midpoints of the triangle sides, and the other three regions are cones, connected like in these pictures with this triangle. And from this you get theorem 2. If our three non-collinear points are given, then there exists a norm and a circle belonging to this, passing through the three vertices, if and only if this point C, which is the midpoint of this norm circle, and you even can realize this in the polygonal world of balls, is in the union of all these four regions shaded in this picture. The proof is relatively long and geometric. First, you have to disprove that a point, a center, can lie in one of these, let me say, non-regions, yes? And you do it by some reflections and, yes, some linear algebra. And the second part of the proof is that you have to study these two types of cases carefully, that the other statement that they are there is also realizable at any point of these regions. And you have to study it extra for K0, as you see. And the right picture occurs then three times. And this is also has to be done. From this we get theorem 3. Let our three points be non-collinear. Assume there are two different circles passing both through our points, and that the segment between T1, so the first triangle side, say, belongs to the intersection of the two circles. Then the following statements hold true. So you see, we are in a world of subcases, and we have no other choice. Just a moment. No center is in the K3 region, which corresponds, of course, to this segment. If C is from the K0 region, then it is from this segment. And the radius can also be given precisely. Moreover, if C is from this, here you need linear algebra, from this segment, then C prime is on this line, and you can unify it with these regions corresponding to C. These two regions you still have to define, and you see that are also cones from the definition, which are suitable. I show a picture in a second. Or maybe I can show already, yes. Here is the corresponding picture. You see the two norm circles, polygonal even. In red color you see the three points. I underlined in blue color the two circles, the notations of them. And here you see still an additional statement to this. Okay, the next statement. Assume that the two centers are from K1 minus K0 in this respect defined in this type above. That means with respect to C, the second center is from the region, and you see it's getting more and more complicated. But I hope the pictures help you somehow. This is continuing. This is, by the way, the longest theorem I ever have proved in my mathematical life. You will see it continues. I hope it's not boring. Here you have pictures to this theorem. And moment. Yes. At any rate, maybe we go not too much here into detail. The interesting thing is that the region, and this you see best in the first picture, the region that you get for one of the midpoints, namely C, I see now that really the quality is not so good. So, how to make this sharper? I'm afraid to make something wrong. Sorry, I hope you can see it a little bit. At any rate, you get a bounded region for C, which you see somehow, no, this is vice versa, which you see somehow here. And the biggest surprise we had in this research was that an hyperbola occurs as bounding curve for this region. And this is an eternal result. You cannot do differently. So this hyperbola comes to be. And here you see, I shorten here you see further cases. And everything you can handle. And with this long theorem, look, it continues. Only that you get an optical impression. With this long theorem, we could clarify all the cases. The proof is 9 pages long and uses a mixture of different methods written in blue, color, convex functions, and a little bit topology even, and linear algebra, and so on and so on. Okay, and this corollary then, which is coming out, is really nice. Under the hypothesis of this theorem, the two centers, C and C prime, are in this line if and only if we have equal radii. And so the proof of this long theorem, which is, the proof is also long, implies if the centers are situated in the described regions, then it is possible to define a polygonal norm such that C and C prime are the centers of the two circles that meet at or that go through the three points. And this later we will see that convex hull helps and we get a segment as the only possible position of such midpoints. Now I switch. This is not completely finished, but in the second part of my talk, now speaking about minimum and closing balls, I will give the rest of this. And we could not write it up in a different way. For this second minimal and closing disks, we need a classification, which was also not done before, of different types of triangles in normed planes. A triangle is said to be norm acute or obtuse or right at one of the vertices of the triangle if we have these inequalities, in the last case equality, and of course I can show you again already pictures which help you a little bit to understand this faster. And now some statements will follow which compare these notions and anything you have here. Any triangle, for example, with this inequality is norm acute at T1. And this proposition implies that if we have this sequence of inequalities, then the triangle is norm acute even at two vertices. So you can have also norm acuteness at two vertices, and this demands further notions. And at T3, the triangle can be of any of the three types then. So this is, for example, in this table, this first thing here. Yeah, you see, remark two. The next is a proposition. If T is an isosceles triangle in the metrical sense defined, you see how it is meant. we assume. And if we have then this sequence of equalities, then the triangle is norm acute at T1, and if it is neither norm obtuse at T2 nor at T3. So you cannot avoid all these subcases. The second statement is somehow similar. Again, a remark. We can give it as proposition, following the proposition 2, what is following from this. T can be either norm-acute or norm-right at T2 and at T3. This is here the second part. Yeah, I could have constructed also a norm circle, but I think one understands this. And T, the triangle, can be of any of the three types at T1. This is here. You can have all these cases. And proposition 3, if T is equilateral in the norm, that means all side lengths are equal, then T is norm obtuse at no vertex. Interesting comparison of things that are very clear in Euclidean norm. T is norm right at a vertex, say T3, if and only if the unit disk is a parallelogram, Manhattan norm, whose sides are parallel to these segments. This is the only case, and this you see here realized in this overview. And if T is norm right at a vertex, then it is norm acute at the two other vertices. And so an equilateral triangle can also be norm acute at all three vertices. And this is the case K, the last one. Here you have acuteness at all the three vertices. That are the vertices. So, and therefore we can give a new definition, which makes sense now because we understood what is possible. A triangle is said to be norm obtuse without mentioning a vertex if it is norm obtuse at some vertex. It is norm right if it is norm right at exactly one vertex. It is doubly norm right if it is norm right at two vertices. You see, interesting, non-Euclidean geometry. And it is norm acute if it is norm acute at the three vertices. And here you have realizations for isosceles triangles and scalene triangles of all these things. So having this, we come now really to the minimal and closing disks. And you see already on this, by this first headline, you see already that we need step by step these types of triangles to come through, yeah, to understand the things. So we call the set of centers of such minimum enclosing disks of a triangle MEDC, minimal enclosing disk centers. And of course, this is only to remind you, this we had already and we needed to prove this first proposition. Again, we assume we have a triangle, but now following our headline, it is norm obtuse or norm right at one of the vertices. And you see, in this case, we can give a lot of positions and describe also the minimum enclosing disks. And maybe we need not go into too much detail, but you see, this is already relatively precise. The positioning of these centers And different to Euclidean geometry, we also get here by some interesting properties a main minimal enclosing disk, which has some nice properties as we shall see later. And I go faster over the things now, only that you get an impression. And the interesting thing here is that also notions like D segments, D bisectors, and even the Fermat-Torricelli locus come in. This is really surprising. For example, this set we call D bisector of two given points. You know, you get the bisector in Euclidean space, you get also if you have here the two points and you blow up two balls always having in any position the same radius. And the intersection of these two balls, which is very nice theorem also for ellipsoids of Paul Goody, gives you this planar, this hyperplane, which is the bisector. The bisectors in norm spaces are research topic. They have a very strange topological and geometrical behavior, and there are still occur papers, appear papers about them. Here we define the D bisector in this way, having in mind this somehow, and the name will be later justified. And we can give a characterization of our position set of the centers of our balls with the help of this notion and with the help of a certain translation which is written here. So this is really needed. Namely, assume we have this triangle. It is norm obtuse and norm right at T3. It can be another vertex, of course. And D is the main minimal enclosing disk of T, so you really need this. Then this set of search midpoints can be described in this way. You need some translation of the D bisector. Here once more a repeating remark. Now I explain this notion, why, where does it come from. This is once more the D segment, you saw it already. This is once more the usual bisector in the plane, which is a line perpendicular to the connecting line segment. And you see, if you combine these two notions, then you get the D bisector, and therefore the name comes from. By the way, as far as I know, this D is coming from, is it correct, Konrad, from Menger himself? It means the metric. It means the metric D. You know, this is the origin of this D. Okay. And here you see once more how it is connected also with the D segment. And now we have this proposition. Let X and Y be different points from our norm plane, then the D bisector can be represented in this way. It is the intersection of these two sets, which is nice. It is therefore a segment and can be also degenerate to a point. And if T is norm obtuse or norm right at T3 and T1, equivalently T2, is an exposed point of this set, then the only minimal enclosing disk of T is its MME disk, which was defined before. And you see that here you also clearly need the boundary structure of the unit ball because of this exposedness. Okay. So, the next results, my time is running slowly out. You see, we get very precise descriptions for this phase, for this case. And we get also, I don't want to go further here into detail, only maybe this. You see here a definition of the Fermat-Torricelli locus, which can, in norm planes, can be more than a point. And this, just a moment, now I'm a bit confused. But here you see a respective corollary. If T is norm obtuse, or norm right at T3, and T1 is not exposed, not an exposed point of the unit disk, and the points of this intersection, this is a circle, and this line connecting the midpoints, if this situation is given, then our set is really describable as the Fermatory Celli locus of three points, which that are translations that you see there. And this is very nice. And of course, the combining notion between Fermatory Celli locus and our problem is the notion of D segment. Okay. I show you simply some pictures now, because I see it is the rest is too long. Of course, after this norm obtuse triangles, other cases come. But here you see some constructions, which give you this solution set, and you see, however the unit ball, the unit circle looks like, we get always something like segments, and in some cases, as possible centers of these circumcircles, also only points. So here you see the next headline. For non-acute triangles, the first section I finished now was the longest, you know, the hardest. And now you have to attack the next type of triangles, and we succeeded with this. And again, partially very long proofs. And the last headline, just a moment, again a long theorem is coming, is also, it's finishing the last case, and here I want to show you only the last pictures from these two long papers, and possibly the most important is this summary. Yeah? From the above results, it follows that for any triangle, the set of midpoints, and therefore we have also the circles, of course, is a segment that can degenerate to a point. So this is really was never done before, and here you have once more all the cases for norm obtuseness, norm rightness, doubly norm right, and norm acute. By the way, we gave also this complete classification of possible triangle types, which you need here as you see. So maybe I finish this long thing with this summary. And I want to finish my talk with a little outlook. What in Chemnitz also is done, by the way. So, for example, we started now also a little bit to look at gauges. You know, gauges or convex distance function are that what Minkowski at the beginning really means. He was meaning the unit ball is a convex body, the origin is an interior point, and that's all. So you have triangle inequality, but you have no symmetry. And this is called gauges or convex distance functions. And if you look into the literature in computational geometry, for example, Rolf Klein and his pupils, then you see that there are papers, and also papers which are only geometric without algorithms. And we look also a little bit in this direction, and I could finish a paper together with a colleague from Ukraine, Scherba his name. He is coming from Diskant. You know, sometimes it's interesting to come into contact with Russian mathematicians, because they had it not so easy to come into contact with us. Maybe in GDR times, but and I was interested to come into contact with this Kant, because he has a lot of papers on Minkowski geometry, and I succeeded to come into connection with a pupil of him. So, for example, your norm circle is now not centrally symmetric. I ask for the Minkowski and pi, I ask for the self-circumference of the unit circle. How is it? So now we call B a normalizing figure, and we reduce our problem immediately to polygons. So the unit circle is a polygon, and here are important notions. Now, of course, orientation is important. How do you go around the unit ball? This is essential. Yeah. So you can measure the perimeter in two times, clockwise and counterclockwise. And of course, if you ask for the global minimum, then this is again not essential. Then you look for the best. So we have still these notions. This is global, and this is taking care for the position of the origin. And due to this, Franco Grünbaum in 64 published two papers. He got these results. The minimum of the last quantity with origin in the interior of our unit ball or normalizing figure has this upper bound, and for triangles you get equality. So if you have a triangle as unit circle, this norm is very norm is very interesting. You have equality here. You can easily check this. In 66, in a second paper, he gave this lower bound with equality if and only if B is a centered affine regular hexagon, which means a norm. Yeah, so here a norm is really extremal. Continuity arguments, and this was more or less discussed by Makeyev also, give this for all n-gons with a vertex number at least 6. So from this point of view, two polygons remain. Triangles we have, 6 gons we have, and more than 6 vertices. 5 gons and 4 gons are open, and we could show, Makeyev posed this question for 4 gons, conjectured this, and we could show that this is the result, a very strange number. And also now, just now we finished also the last case, which is almost written up, the proofs are correct. We got a similar number also for 5 gons. So that are the two strange cases, 4 gons and 5 gons. And yes, we also looked for bifactors in the non-symmetric case and have some results there, but maybe I don't want to go into details. Here you see that bisectors in normed planes can look very strange, and we got some results for the non-symmetric case on bisectors, which of course can be used also for Voronoi diagrams. This is all I wanted to tell you.